Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Reg, good, good, good. What do you say we do a little podcasting here? All right, cool. Good mood? I am. I'm in a good mood today. So what do you say? Let's take advantage of that. All right, here we go. Get that trigger finger ready. I give you the three S's, and I'll give you the countdown. And when I say 3, 2, 1, you hit that record button. And we will get a podcast in the bank. What do you say? We're getting close here now. This is in a book. This is 498. 498 as we continue our forward thrust toward 500. 498. Wow. All right. Ready? Okay, star, smile, strong. Get ready. 3, 2, 1. Hey, it's Elton Jim Toronto, and this is Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget, it's always important to listen to the podcast, but I think it's just as important for you to get out there and tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. It's always good to get some free pub out there, so get out there and spread the word. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Of course, if you like what you hear, whether you've been with us since episode number one or for almost 10 years, or even in the last 2 weeks, whatever time you've been with us, however you've discovered us. If you're a regular listener now and always have been, it's always good to go back maybe sometimes and listen to a rerun. Oh, remember that one? All right, yeah, that was fun. Or, wow, I never heard this one before. I know that it's not easy to listen to every episode all the time, but they're banked there for you. So go to WGNRadio.com. Go to the podcast section, hit the prompt for this podcast, and sure enough, you will find loads and loads and loads of previous podcasts for your podcasting pleasure. How's that for alliteration? That's a juicy, those are juicy words to say, as we say in the trade. The p sound, very juicy. A lot of spit comes off of those. So, but I say that with all enthusiasm. Loads of podcasts for your podcasting pleasure. So go there and check those out. Just load more and scroll down. Load more and scroll down. There's a lot in there. They're not all there, but there's a good number. Don't forget, we've been doing these since May 2016, going on 10 years. And this is 498. Wow, 498. Two more podcasts, a number 500, and then we are off to 600, right? Who knows? Wow, that's a very cool number, and we're going to do that before the end of the year. Today, obviously, this week is the 8th, so next week will be the 15th, and then the week after that will be the 22nd, Christmas week. How fitting that episode 500 will be Christmas week. A nice little Christmas gift for us all, both the listener and me, and of course, Reggie, the producer as well. So that'll be a fun podcast. I still haven't decided what I'm going to do for episode 500, to be honest with you. As I've said many times, you can have a big blowout podcast, I guess, and do all, but, you know, I don't know. 500 is a big number. It's a great number. It's a cool number. But it's a number. 600 is even bigger. Yeah. We'll see. But right now, let's focus on number 498. Now, I'll have to say something that, we all, especially in the last, 25 years, at least 20, maybe even more than that now, probably about 20, I would say, pretty close to it. Well, not 20 yet. No, 15. The iPhone was introduced in 2007. So It's 18 years now that we've had the iPhone. 18 years. And while we've had Facebook before the iPhone, Facebook really, you know, jump-started the whole social media world. So Facebook's been around before the iPhone, but it certainly, as I said before, kicked it into high drive in terms of usage, and then the entire social media category just exploded once we had a computer basically in our pockets, in our purses, in our hands. And so since then, I've talked about this many times, our complete behavior has changed because of this. And now we get out there on a daily basis, and we're almost expected to do it. We crave to do it. We just love to give our opinions on anything, you name it. And why now? I mean, we've always liked to give our opinions on things, right? It helps, you know, it boosts your self-esteem. It feeds your ego, especially if people listen, and especially if people, in today's world, follow you. But at least if they agree with you. Wow. You know, once again, we're all about views and likes in today's world. Well, before views and likes, there was just people that agreed with you and followed you, not with a computer, but who actually agreed with you and were admirers of what you may have said. It was all about access, though. Those who had the access. Well, today we all have access, literally. Everybody in the world has the potential to have access to some kind of audience. It's up to you to decide how big that audience could be in terms of people that follow you or like you or listen, whatever it is. A lot of it's luck, a lot of it's strategy. It's a combination of both in many ways, as much of life is as well, right? But so we all love now to just put out our opinions, what we like to do. We are out there. We are posting pictures and messages and updates on everything. Our lives are out there. The majority of people are out there sharing everything, almost everything. And it's almost an expectation at this point. I don't know where it's leading. I don't know if it's necessarily a good thing in the grand scheme, but it doesn't matter. The cat's out of the bag. And so inevitably, when you put yourself out there, you have to be ready for. And a lot of people, you know, the funny thing with the social media world is that a lot of people think that, oh, it's just so fun to share. And if I like it, or if I think something is good, or if I have an opinion on something, well, I'm sure that everybody else agrees with me, right? Because, I mean, I'm always right. And if you're new to the media world, like I said, I've been around the media for most of my career, and I've been in jobs and positions where I have always talked about my opinion on things, whether it was my first media job ever while I was still in college, writing a music column. I was basically a music critic, and so I was telling you, my readers, what was good and what was bad, what I thought was cool, what wasn't, and offering my opinions on a weekly basis. So when you put yourself out there, you get used to, or, well, you never get used to it, let's put it that way, but you come to expect that, no, once you open up your sphere of influence, if you will, or that audience, when you expand your access, it's not just telling what you think to your friends or family, but now you put your thoughts and opinions out into the public square, you must be prepared for blowback, for criticism, for disagreement, for vehement disagreement, for people to criticize you, for people to attack you, perhaps. You don't know what. You know, if you tell your friends or your family or your, you know, significant others, you know, people may disagree with you, but they will still temper their disagreement because they know you, they like you, they love you, they want to maintain your friendship. But when you put your opinions out into the public square where people don't know you and they don't care whether they make you sad, make you mad, they hurt your feelings, they don't care. In fact, some people might even be aiming to do that. Oh, yeah, you think that you know everything? Hot shot? Well, here's what I think, and I think you're a jerk. And so if you've been in the, you know, and believe me, when I was, I was in my early 20s. I mean, I don't think I was even 21 years old when I started to actually write a column. I used to write for my, school newspapers and in high school and college. And so, I had some, exposure to, some negative things that I may have said, written. People don't agree or they didn't like my opinion or something like that. But as you go to the next step, the number of people that they have the potential to see what you're reading or writing or saying, it grows. And obviously I started to do some work in television and work in radio. And so then, just expands the amount of people depending on, the types of organizations that you were on. And that's basically how it worked. Now, once the internet came and something known as, the internet changed everything, as I've said many times, especially a lot of the things that I trained to do. People don't need training anymore. We just click on a switch and people have their own shows or they have their own, whatever it is, video blogs, YouTube channels, blogs, vlogs. YouTube channels, Instagram accounts, TikTok accounts, you name it. There was a time, there was a filter. They didn't give everybody this opportunity. You sort of had to earn it. Well, those days are gone. We don't really like earning things anymore. We just like to have them. We really have lost the earning part of it. We just, we all feel that everybody now has a right to have a public forum to share their views. And we always have had those, but we never had them in our homes. Once again, you could publicly protest if you wanted to show your agreement or disagreement on something. There was always letters to the editors, but once again, there was always a filter there. You sent in letters to the editor and the editor decided whether, this is a good letter to print. And some never got printed. Here, once again, on a daily basis, on a minute by minute basis, you could sit all day and spout your opinions on anything. Now, whether anybody hears them or not depends on how well you're communicating that out there, getting your name out there. But you certainly have the ability to share whatever you say. But at the same time, if you're going to do that, buyer beware. Be careful what you want because you just might get it. If you're going to put yourself out there, if you're going to put your opinions out there, if you're going to put yourself out there, you have to be prepared for the haters. You have to be prepared for the criticism. This isn't just your small circle of friends anymore. This isn't just your family and your loved ones who like you and don't want to hurt your feelings. If you're going to put yourself out into the public, then you better get a tough skin. Either you have a tough skin going into this adventure, but at the same time, if you don't, you better learn to develop a very thick skin because you might have a lot of people that agree with you, but you're going to find some people that don't. And trust me, if you put yourself out there, the funny thing is when you read something from somebody that says something nice about you, it's a great feeling. We all know that now. Most of us get that feeling. Even if you post something on your Facebook page, as simple as that, and somebody puts a thumbs up or a heart or something, it's just a nice thing to say, someone appreciated what I posted. And we love that. But we tend to forget those. And they're flattering and they make you feel good, but they're passing, they're fleeting, they're temporary. What you find a lot of times is that you remember the negative things. You can remember them word for word years later. It's amazing how our brains are wired. You'd think that we would put away the negativity and bury that and revel in and appreciate and remember the good things. And you do. You remember some of the good things that people may have said about something that you've done or something that you've said or something like that. But at the same time, you always remember those negative comments for some reason too. I mean, you know, not only, as I said, being someone, you know, who has written in the past, and I still write stories about music and things like that for different publications, and people will respond either positively or negatively sometimes. But my point is, I mean, you know, I've been acting for more than 20 years now, and many times the plays that I am in have been reviewed in newspapers and online, and you know, people will write positive and negative reviews. And while I love the positive ones, and I remember a lot of those, and I remember them word for word, but I also remember the negative ones. Those stick with me, even if they were from 20 years ago. I remember them. It's very weird. It's very strange the way the mind is wired. But at the same time, you have to expect that. You know, and many people think like, oh, well, this is just so fun, sharing what I like, and everybody will just like everything I do. Well, no, that's not the case. And sometimes people are very, you know, mentally damaged by this. You know, I mean, what's cyberbullying right now, right? I mean, that can be defined in many ways. But yeah, I mean, now we've used the term haters out there. You know, there's haters. That never used to be a term, but now in this world where everybody, as I said before, is sharing everything, there's a lot of commonality that starts to show up, and so all of a sudden things get categorized, and so those negative comments are now just kind of, you know, all, you know, blocked together as the haters, and they're out there. And there's nothing wrong with somebody disagreeing with your opinion. And as I said, I just think, and I sometimes I respond if somebody has a very well thought out and legitimate argument against something that I've said or something that I've written or something that I shared on this podcast, as I said, with my stage work or something that I've written. If somebody criticizes what I do and offers it in a very well thought out way and say, well, here's why I disagree with what you said and here's why, and lays out a good argument, sometimes I might even say, you know, I never thought of that. You're right. Or sometimes I might say, well, I respect your opinion. However, here's what I think and here's why, but I appreciate you at least commenting on it. I'm glad that at least whatever I wrote piqued your interest enough for you to respond, even if you didn't agree with what I said or you didn't like what I said. I appreciate you sharing that, and I appreciate the argument that you made. Now, some people will just flat out and just say you're a jerk and not offer anything. They just don't like you for whatever reason, and so they just spout some knee-jerk kind of cruel comment just to get your ire. And those I don't respond to, because it's like, okay, well, if you're going to be rude to me, then I'm not going to respond to you. Why should I do that? Why? I don't want to get into a back and forth with somebody who's really not interested in perhaps learning what I was talking about, or somebody isn't interested in maybe helping to educate me to say, well, here's why you're wrong. I'm not right on everything, which will be the main thrust of this. I'll get there. Stay with me. I try to, when I have an opinion, I just don't come up with it willy-nilly. I consider, and before I share anything, whether it's on this podcast or in the written word or on the radio somewhere or whatever, I think it out. and I make sure that I've got at least some validatable data to back up my opinion. I just don't spout out an opinion willy-nilly without having any facts to back it up. So if somebody disagrees with me and says, here's why you're wrong, and then has their own set of facts, which contradict me but are also validatable, then at least I'll say, well, okay, either I didn't know about that or I never thought about it that way, and maybe you'll even change my mind. But if you're just going to spout out, oh, you're a jerk and that's stupid, then I don't even bother. I'm not interested in that. That's more just, those are haters. You know, I like a spirited debate. I like being the devil's advocate. I enjoy the give and take because I will always learn from that. Either I will learn that I am even more confident in my argument after hearing someone else debate me and maybe not really get enough information or data to support that. Or maybe sometimes, as I said, they will come at me and they'll say, here, boom, here's, you're wrong, and here's boom, 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 boom. And I'm like, wow, you know what? I didn't know any of that. I have to go back and rethink that. I don't mind that. That's how we learn. That's the problem with in today's world, is that everybody thinks they are right and the other side is completely wrong. And even if they are offered or presented with some irrefutable facts, they will not believe them, or they will cast them aside, or they will spin them or change them in order for them to not be something that disproves their point. Or they will just flat out say, I don't care, I don't agree, you're wrong. Well, that's the problem. That's where we're at right now. We don't have spirited debate. Both sides on most issues, sadly, today are so just, engrossed into what they, entrenched in what they believe, that the other side, no matter what it is, can never be right. Even if it's very clear that the facts are on the other person's side. On the other side, one side will never give in. They will never, ever. It's viewed as you're being a traitor, you're being weak. I don't see how we get out of this. I really don't, because neither side in anything, not just politics, that's the most obvious, but in anything, it just seems that's what's happened in the social media world. In fact, in my point of view, I would rebrand this. I would call it the anti-social media, because that's what we're becoming. We're becoming anti-social because of this. We are so entrenched that we only think and we only think what we believe is correct. We only want to hear or speak. We only want to hear the views that agree with what we think. We only want to be surrounded by the people whose views are the same as ours. And if you do that, it becomes a groupthink. It becomes, you're in a bubble and you are really cutting yourself off. You are now not learning. You are not opening yourself up to other possible ideas or realities or truths, because you are just, this is what I believe, and nothing can change me. And as I've said on this podcast many times, I think it's our goal to continue to always be learning, to always be changing. If you're the same person that you were when you were 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or even 15, and you're in your 30s or 40s or 50s or 60s, wow, or 70s, and you're the same person, you believe the same things, and you haven't moved an inch, well, I don't know if that's something to strive for, because there's so much out there, and there's no way that you can possibly know everything when you were 15 years old. Right? I mean, to me, that just makes sense. You know, I just did this play recently called Inherit the Wind. And it's a play that I've, well, I never saw the play before. I mean, before I saw the movie, I saw a film, which is a famous film, was made in 1960 with Spencer Tracy and Frederick March. And it was a fictionalized version of the infamous 1925 Scopes Monkey Trial, in which a southern city in Tennessee in 1924 and 25 passed a law that no creation story could be taught in the public schools except the biblical story in Genesis. So in other words, it was a movement to block the ever-growing, at that time, somewhat new and revolutionary theory of Charles Darwin and evolution, which had come out in the late 1800s. And so, obviously, this was a affront to religion. I mean, this was talking about, man evolving as opposed to, you know, the biblical story of God creating the world in 7 days and things like that. And so, being a Tennessee town in the Bible Belt, you know, this was an affront to people's religion and their beliefs that they learned from when they were in the crib. And they didn't want to hear anything new or different. So they passed this law. And so then there was a teacher who reportedly taught evolution, maybe on purpose. Maybe he never even did. Perhaps he was just agreed to be the defendant. But the idea was to get this law changed, or at least to get this law considered. Not, you know, just passed through the legislature, but was it really legal? Is this something that really should be there? And so there was this famous case called the Scopes Monkey Trial. John Scopes was the defendant. And Clarence Darrow, one of the most famous lawyers of that time, represented Scopes against a well-known fundamentalist and politician, a three-time presidential candidate named William Jennings Bryan, a very popular and populist figure who was considered the champion of the little guy, of the underdog, of the common man. And so basically you had this big city agnostic, Clarence Darrow, coming to this southern town up against this fundamentalist, Bible-thumping champion for the common man, William Jennings Bryan, in a courtroom, both skilled orators as well as skilled lawyers, to battle this case in front of a jury. And it became, it was the first live radio broadcast of an event, of a live event. And guess what? It was on WGN Radio. WGN Radio in Chicago went to Tennessee and broadcast the verdict of the Scopes Monkey Trial. The first live broadcast of an event. So WGN, good old WGN, making history. In fact, the microphone that was used at that event in Dayton, Tennessee, is in the Smithsonian Institute. So how cool is that? But so anyway, there's a film called Inherit the Wind that is a fictionalized version of this infamous Scopes Monkey Trials. And Spencer Tracy plays the Clarence Darrow character, whose name is changed for the film, called Henry Drummond. And Frederick March plays the William Jennings Bryan character, who in the play is called Matthew Harrison Brady, and in the film. And it's basically a courtroom drama, and of course it takes on a great dramatic moments when the fundamentalist Matthew Harrison Brady is on the witness stand, and Henry Drummond, who's supposedly, you know, fashioned after the Darrow character, attack, well, not so much attacks, but tries to cut and crack holes in the biblical story of creation. If this is what's going to be taught to kids, how about some facts? And so, of course, a lot of the biblical stories don't hold up to factual things. And so it's an interesting battle of wits as well as a battle of ideologies. And really, it was one of the first court cases to highlight a modernist view versus a fundamentalist kind of view. It was a very important real-life case, and it wound up being a big hit on Broadway play, which was turned into a film. Academy Award-nominated film. Spencer Tracy was nominated for the role of Henry Drummond. And so I played that role, and it was, I've been a fan of this movie since I was, I would say, in my late teens and early 20s. It was one of the first movies that I rented. This is no lie. One of the first movies I ever rented on a VHS when it was available. I always heard about Inherit the Wind, and I rented it. When movies first came out on video, I wasn't, back in the 80s on VHS, I wasn't going to my local video store, my mom and pop video store, or then, you know, the actual like Blockbuster thing. I wasn't necessarily getting the new movies. No. I wanted to see the old movies. These movies that I'd always heard about, these actors and actresses that I'd always heard about, these great films that I'd always heard about that I'd never seen. Because you have to wait for them to be on the late, late show on some local television. And so that's what VHS and home video, it opened up a whole new world for me. As in my late teens and early 20s, just to experience for the first time and be old enough to really understand movies like, you know, as I said, Casablanca or Citizen Kane or all these films that you heard about and come to appreciate the Marx Brothers and all these older stars of the past who you heard about, and you heard about the Maltese Falcon, and you heard about all these other films, like I said, Casablanca and things like that, but I'd never seen them. And here they were. And that's what I went to school on. I didn't get the new movies. I got the old movies. And I still enjoy the old movies. But Inherit the Wind was one of the first ones I'd ever seen. And it really helped shape many of my own personal beliefs. And I really came to admire the character that Spencer Tracy played. And so to be able to do this many years later, many decades later, and to actually become that character and play that character and say those words, some of the same words that Spencer Tracy said, wow, what an honor. It was a great personal fulfillment of mine. And thankfully, audiences enjoyed my performance and enjoyed the production, and it was a very fulfilling thing. And I bring all this up because one of the lines in the film or in the play that I got to say on a nightly basis really rings true to me as I'm speaking today to you right about this. And as I was saying at the beginning, is that it's really, in my view, it's important to always be learning. And it's important to you can certainly believe things that you've always learned, but it's always good to find out more information, to inform yourself, to either validate what you've already learned. If you find more information to say, well, here's why, that's great. Or perhaps you find some new information that you never heard before, and maybe it begins to change your mind, and maybe it begins to open up your worldview on things, personally as well as universally. As I said, I think that if you think you've learned everything that needs to be learned by the time you're 15 or 16 or 17, wow, I think you're missing out. Especially in today's world, we have access to so much information with a couple of keystrokes. It's unprecedented, the kind of access that we have to information. There's no reason that you can't expand and find out more information about anything that you want. And as I said before, it doesn't mean that you have to change everything you believe in. Maybe you're going to find information that validates what you mean. That's great. But I think if you just shut yourself off at a certain time in your life and you say, I don't need to learn anything more, that could be dangerous. And I think you're cheating yourself. And my character said something to a young character in the play who was kind of confused and mixed up and didn't know which way to go and was in fear of some of the leaders of the community who were so steadfast in what they believed, especially the religious leaders in their town, this small southern town, a small Tennessee town, that there was no doubt of what they believed was the truth. And there was nothing anybody could say that could shake them. There was no new information. They didn't know about Charles Darwin. They didn't want to hear about it. They didn't want to learn it. They didn't want to know anything about it. All they knew is that it was a potential threat to what they believed in, and they didn't want any part of it. They didn't want to read about it and maybe think about it. No, they knew what they knew, and they were done. And my character was saying to this young woman who was trying to figure some things out, and she's like, I'm mixed up, and so is Bert, who was the Scopes character in the play. And she says, he's mixed up, and I'm mixed up, and I'm mixing him up, and at the end of a scene, I got to say this every night, and I loved saying it, and I think it just rings true to me. It rang true to me years ago and maybe helped on my kind of quest for knowledge and always trying to find new ideas or at least find facts about things and expand my sense of knowledge and expand my and open myself to new ideas. But my character would respond to this character who said, I'm mixed up and I'm mixing him up. And my character said, the man who's got everything figured out is probably a fool. It takes a pretty smart fella to say, I don't know the answer. And boy, does that ring true to me. Anybody who thinks that they know it all, who've got it all figured out, well, nobody has everything figured out. This world is so complex. We have tried to put simple explanations to complicated things in order for us to make sense of our world. But once again, the more that we've learned, we realized how much we don't know. And so it takes a pretty smart fellow to realize that, no, we don't know the answer. We've got theories, we've got beliefs, but we really don't know the answer to many, many, many things. And I just love that line. The person who's got everything figured out is probably a fool. It takes a pretty smart fella to say, I don't know what the answer is. And so I think you should think about that if you're going to head out into the social media world. You could put your opinion out there, but you should always be ready for someone who's going to question you or disagree with you or criticize you or even insult you. If you don't want that, then don't share, because that's out there. Some people, as I said, do it for the sake of doing it. And some other people have a legitimate claim to say, no, I don't agree with you, and here's why. So you better get a tough skin if you get out there into the anti-social media, which is what I call it now. I just thought of that right now. I don't know if anybody else has, but that, to me, that's what's happening. We're becoming anti-social media. And so here's a little personal experience that I'd like to share with you to show you why it's okay to say, I don't know the answer. Or, I was wrong. So, on my social media page for the last several years, in fact, look, I've talked about this when I've talked about sports in many ways. I'm not your average fan and of anything, whether it's sports, whether it's you name it. As I said, I've grown up in this kind of journalistic point of view in my mind. I was a trained journalist from a teenager and then into my early career to always question, to always be skeptical. And so to play devil's advocate, to get to the truth. And most people don't think that way. And so a lot of times I will rub people the wrong way. It's just because it's the way my mind works. And that applies to sports too. Look, I am a huge sports fan. I've talked about that many times. My favorite sports are baseball and hockey and football and I followed those as a little kid. I still have so much of the memorabilia of Cubs memorabilia and Blackhawks memorabilia and Bears memorabilia as a little kid. I'm not a Bears basher. I'm not a Sox and Cubs hater. I'm not a Blackhawks basher. When those teams are going well and doing well, I am supporting them with as much gusto as I can and excitement as I can, because they are delivering on what they're supposed to do. When I get upset, when I bash a home team, and I know in some people's minds, you don't bash the home team at all. And I would equate that to, I don't want to hear anything bad about what I think is right. I'm entrenched. I want to be surrounded by sports fans who think like I do. I want to give high fives and fist bumps. I don't want to hear anything negative. I don't want to hear anything different that might question my beliefs that my team is the best. You see a connection there? Does that sound kind of interesting for what I or similar to what I was just talking about in Inherit the Wind? And that was about religion? Yeah. Sports fans can be as fervent and have much blind faith in their sports fans and their sports teams as they do in their religious beliefs. And they don't want to hear anything that contradicts that. I don't want to hear blah, 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 blah. But here's the facts. They don't care. They don't want to hear it. And I don't do this to get people's ire up. I don't get this to get people upset. I want the sports teams, especially here in Chicago, since I was born and raised here, I want the sports teams, because this is a major city, major market, one of the best sports, loyal sports cities there is. I want all of our teams to be contenders for their respective championships every year, because they should be. We have the fan base who spends the money for those owners who should be able to go out there and make their teams not just competitive, not just, they should go above and beyond. A Chicago team, a New York team, and an LA team, those cities should be, all of their teams should be in the playoffs every year. And not just in the playoffs, they should be a contender every year to be in the championship of their respective sport. They should be one of the top teams to say this team has a legitimate team to win the championship in this sport, whether it's the Cubs, the Sox, the Bulls, the Bears, or the Blackhawks, or the Fire. We'll throw the world soccer world in there and all the other professionals. But the major Chicago sports, there's no excuse that the ownership of every team does not field a team that at the beginning of every season is a legitimate contender to get not just the playoffs. No, that's a means to an end. I was just watching a documentary from Pete Rose. They were talking about the Cincinnati Reds in the 70s, one of the best teams, a big red machine. From 1970 to 1976, they were probably one of the best teams in baseball consistently. And Pete Rose was interviewed and said, when we got to spring training, we never expected not to win the World Series. From our first day of practice, we never thought we would not be in the World Series. And not only did they not think it, that they were expecting to go, but the outside world said these guys have a great shot to go back to the World Series every year. And to me, when you've got a huge market with a lot of revenue and you've got huge amounts of diehard fans who've been fans for 50, 60 years and it's passed down, and people buy the T-shirts and they buy the sweatshirts and they buy the hats and they buy the everything and they buy the season tickets and they watch the games and it becomes a cultural and a family type of thing. When you've got that kind of loyalty, blind faith loyalty, to me, that needs to be repaid by the owners to say thank you for that. From my standpoint, most Chicago owners don't do that. When they have done it, we've seen amazing results. The Blackhawks, 3 Stanley Cups in, 5 or 6 years? Amazing. The Bulls, 6 championships, 3 times, 2 three-peats. Amazing. That's when ownership and players gel together. Now, we've seen some championships. The White Sox won in 2005. The Cubs won in 2016. We've seen the Bulls, or the Bears haven't won since 1985, though, folks. 40 years this year. It's a long time. We've got a godson who's 40. He was born in 85. He doesn't remember seeing the Bears win the Super Bowl, but he's a Bear fan. And he cheers for them every day, every year. But he's never seen them win a Super Bowl. I've only seen them win one Super Bowl in my lifetime. And so it drives me crazy when I see some of the ownerships in this city getting this blind loyalty, this amazing loyalty. I think Chicago fans are among the most knowledgeable and certainly the most loyal and the most supportive of their teams. And that's what makes me so mad, because I don't think that a lot of the ownerships have appreciated that and earned that. The sports fans in this town have given that and made them billionaires. And we have, and the sports and the fans have gotten very little in return. Now, I wouldn't say all the time, though. As I said, the Blackhawks had an amazing run, and they're having a great season this year so far, or certainly an improved one. And the Cubs at least made the playoffs this year again after almost 8 years not being in the playoffs. But the Bulls are still struggling, and at least they're getting a little better. But the White Sox, are still 100 losses every year for the last 3 years. It's not good. Oh, it's not as much as 120 losses. Well, I don't know. Is that the new standard, not to lose 100? So that I'm not a basher of Chicago sports. It makes me mad when Chicago fans who are so passionate, so loyal, so knowledgeable, accept mediocrity every year and then say, well, we'll wait till next year. Drives me crazy. I think that the sports owners should earn that loyalty, that blind faith, that support, that passion that the fans have given them. Because when they do earn it, you see great things happen. you see great things happen. And so, yeah, I've been very tough on the McCaskey ownership because I think that they've taken advantage of Bear fans over the years. And the facts are there. I mean, a diehard Bear fan doesn't want to hear the facts. But the facts is that the Bears haven't won a championship since 1986. In that 1985 season, they won the Super Bowl in 86, but it was the 85 season. It's been 40 years. And every year since then, Bear fans have been saying how the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl this year. And since then, they've only been to one. And they got completely trounced in that game. So the facts are not on your side, but I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to hear it. Well, then you get what you pay for because you've accepted mediocrity for 40 years, pretty much. So I'm not a Bear basher. I'm a realist. I'm not delusional. I'm a realist. So for the last several years, on my Facebook page, I have looked at the Bears season in a very realistic way. I've looked at their schedule. I've been very honest about the teams that they've had. I don't give them the automatic benefit of the doubt. I don't bend over backwards to break my spine in order to give the Bears the benefit of the doubt. I look at things very realistically based on the quality of the team that the Bears have and the quality of the team that they're playing. And I make yearly predictions before the season starts. So it's not any catching a wave. I'm not jumping on any bandwagons of either success or failure. I do it before the first game, and I lay out my predictions. And over the last several years, especially, this team has been horrendous. Over the last 12, 15 years, terrible, terrible teams. Revolving door of head coaches and quarterbacks and just awful. There's no other way to say it. Look at this. Look at the records. Yeah, there have been a few winning seasons in between, but no Super Bowls, very few playoffs. The Bears don't go into a season with other people saying that they are going to win the Super Bowl. Oh, in Chicago, they certainly do. Every year, they're going to win the Super Bowl. They win two or three games in a row, and they're going to the Super Bowl. And then, of course, they lose the next 10. So I make these predictions, and I am very honest. I'm, as I've said many times here, I'm just a realist. What can I say? Maybe I'm playing devil's advocate sometime. I'm trying to convert people to say, please, the only way the Bears are going to get any better is if you stop accepting the mediocrity, if you stop accepting the narrative and demand that the team really gets better, hires the right people, the right players, the right coaches. And so, of course, over the offseason, after a disastrous 3 years with a completely unqualified head coach, Matt Eberflus, good defensive coordinator, no question. He's having a great success this year in Dallas. Can't deny that, but he wasn't a head coach. He just was not a head coach. There's a difference between a coordinator and a head coach. The Bears have always scrimped, and they've plucked these first-time coaches with no head coaching experience because they can get them on the cheap. And that's what they wind up getting. They fire them after 3 years. It's pretty much the same script. Well, this year they went out and got the hottest, once again, coordinator with no professional head coaching experience, but the hot guy, Ben Johnson. And so everybody was excited. He transformed the Detroit Lions from a perennial bottom feeder team to almost going to the Super Bowl last year. And his offensive schemes were credited with that. And so the Bears fired their horrendous coach and hired Ben Johnson. And of course, then Bear Nation was, we're going to the Super Bowl. Well, I mean, I understand the excitement, But I'm still looking at the team. And they lost 10 games in a row the year before. They were 4-2 and they wound up 5-12. Okay? They were 4-2 at one time. They lost 10 games in a row. And while they made some, they changed the coach, which is huge, but you can't expect overnight a new system to change like that. Still had the same quarterback, Caleb Williams, with a big question mark on his back after a disastrous rookie season. And they made some interesting additions, but nobody expected them to be a Super Bowl contender. They expect them to be better. Of course, the diehard blind faith Bear fans were expecting them to be, you know, 12-5 or in some crazy numbers. But most people were like, you know, if the Bears won 6 or 7 games, that's a huge improvement. If they were 500, that would be great. But I looked at the schedule once again, and knowing how what a disastrous season Caleb Williams had and how bad the offensive line was for the Bears last year, and he got sacked like 90, 80, some 60 times, some crazy number, I realized the team would get a little better with Ben Johnson, but you still, the greatest scheme in the world needs players to execute it. And I didn't think in one season that they were going to be that much better. Despite all the hype and all the optimism of Ben Johnson coming here. And I looked at the schedule and they're playing the defending Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles, and some very, and all legitimate Super Bowl, and several legitimate Super Bowl contending teams throughout the season, as well as they were now in one of the toughest divisions. Green Bay Packers are no slouches anymore. The year before, last year, the Minnesota Vikings won 14 games. The Packers won 11 or 12, and the Lions went to the, were one game away from the Super Bowl. So the chances, and they have to play those three teams two times, you know, that could, there's six potential losses before the season even begins, before you even look at the other teams. So I was looking at a very realistic way based on last year and based on what they'd done over the offseason. No doubt they got the hottest coaching prospect, but I didn't think that they still had the personnel that he would be able to make a complete turnaround for this team. And so my annual prediction was 5-12. Well, you know, the Bear fans who had been salivating since he was hired in late December, early January, been waiting now for 9 months. Oh, did they attack me? As I said, you have to be ready. If you're going to put yourself out there, especially with something like that, I knew that I was going to ruffle feathers. I didn't do it on purpose. I looked game for game and said, here, who are they going to beat? Are they going to beat the Cincinnati Bengals with Joe Burrow? I don't think so. Are they going to beat the Steelers with Aaron Rodgers? I don't think so. Are they going to beat the Vikings, who were 14-3 last year? I don't think so. Are they going to beat the Detroit Lions, who are one game away from the Super Bowl? I don't think so. Are they going to beat the 49ers, who are one of the best teams? Are they going to beat the Commanders, who had a great season last year? So I'm looking at what the Bears were last year and what they did over the offseason, and even though I certainly knew that Ben Johnson eventually, I think, could possibly do something, I didn't think in one season there would be a complete turnaround. And so I was just being honest. Even though it wow, did people attack me? I mean, wow, talk about having to have a thick skin. I put 5-12, and wow, did the Elton Jim haters come out? Even though I said they were going to be 6-11 last year, and they were 5-12. They actually did worse than I thought they did. And when I said they were going to be 6-11 last year, people attacked me. And they did worse. I didn't hear from many people then when the season was over. But my gosh, did I hear at the beginning of this season there was so much hope. And of course, they lost their first game, and they were 0-2 at the beginning of the season, actually. And if you've watched any of the Bears, yes, they are 9-3. They will have a winning season. There's only 17 games. So even if they lost the rest of the games, they'll be 9-8 and have their first winning season in many years, since I think 2018. But many of their wins have been suspect, and I'm not the only one saying that. There's been a lot of question over the last several weeks, are the Bears legit? I would say at least five of their wins, and that's being honest, were lucky wins that were handed to them by really bad teams who couldn't finish. The Bears were losing in the last 2 minutes in almost every one of those games, and they wound up winning. That means that the other teams were really bad in not being able to hold the lead, fumbling, block kicks, interceptions, you name it, or just the defense not holding with a lead with less than 2 minutes to go. But regardless, the Bears were winning these games. And suddenly, the wins, the victories, were piling up. And while I could say, yeah, but they were cheap wins or gimme wins or the best play, you know, Joe Burrow was out for this game and Aaron Rodgers wasn't there for that game and blah, 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 it didn't matter. They were still winning the games, and right now they are in first place as I record this, much to my surprise. I think much to everybody's surprise. And I had to admit, after watching the last game that they played before I record this, was against the Philadelphia Eagles, the defending Super Bowl champs with their starting quarterback. And the Bears completely dominated the Eagles on both sides of the ball. Defensively, they threw Jalen Hurts. He was never in sync. They just got him completely out of his game. The offensive coordinator didn't know what to do against the Bear defense. It was laughable. And the Bears' offensive line was superior, dominating. They had 200-yard rushers. It was the first time, I think, since 1985, since Walter Payton played. The Bears had two running backs who had 100 yards in a game. That was the Super Bowl team. I think it was Walter Payton and Matt Sui who both had 100 yards. That's unheard of in today's world because you know, it's such a passing game now. But even I, after watching that game, as skeptical and as not negative, but just being realistic, if I'm going to be realistic and point out their faults, I had to be realistic and admit how good they were. And they weren't just good against the Eagles. They were fantastic. They were dominating. They humiliated the defending Super Bowl champs. And not only that, they did it in Philadelphia, in one of the most hostile home fields there are. Philly fans are notoriously not only loyal, but violent and hostile. And the Bears shut them up from the beginning. And they humiliated the defending champs in their own house by completely outplaying them in every sense of the word and throughout the entire game. And I had to say, wow. Wow. And so, I've never tooted my own horn when I was correct on my predictions, which were always losing records. I never said, oh, you know, folks, I told you. I never did that. I never gloated. Now, Bear fans like to gloat. But you know what? After the way they played against the Eagles, they have a right to gloat. And so, I thought to be, once again, so I'm not a hypocrite, if I'm saying, you know, you have to change, you have to, if you get new information that may change your mind, you should be open to that. You shouldn't just be entrenched when the facts don't support what you say. Even if you don't want to believe it, there should be some ability to say, maybe I was wrong. And I admit it. I posted that night or the next morning on Monday. Oh, no, Friday, because on Saturday, the game was on the day after Thanksgiving. And I started out my post with the Bears that said, I was wrong. And I basically explained just what I said to you. And I said, you know what? I have to say, while I don't know if the Bears have really improved that much, yes, I still think that many of their losses were gifts, but you can't deny their record. They're in first place with 9 wins. They're going to have a winning record, and they humiliated the defending champions. So you know what? I have to admit I was wrong. And, you know, a lot of Bear fans were saying, ha-ha, we told you, ha-ha-ha. But some were like, you know what, Jim? Good for you. I have a lot of respect for you for admitting you were wrong, as opposed to just hunkering down and denying it. Because being delusional on the other side of how bad the Bears would be is just as delusional as when you're saying that they're good when they aren't. For me to say that they're bad when they aren't is just as delusional. I'd be a hypocrite. I'd be close-minded. I wouldn't be learning. And so I admitted I was wrong. And you know what? As tough as it was initially to admit, I felt good about myself. I felt like, you know what? I was able to put aside my ego, to put aside my opinions, to put aside my hard-held beliefs that I put out there in the public forum. If I'm going to put out those beliefs and say that I'm right, then I should be able to turn around and admit in that same forum to that same audience when I'm wrong. That's walking the walk and talking the talk. And I always respect people that do that. And I always try to do that. And so I felt that it was something I had to do. And you know what? While it's difficult to say I was wrong, and we never want to admit that. We don't want to admit blame. We always come up with excuses. But there comes a point when you really just have to be honest with yourself. And I had to face that I needed to be honest with myself. I was wrong. And I wasn't just going to keep my mouth shut and let people go, ha ha, sore loser. He said they were going to be 5-12. I don't see him saying anything now that they're 9-3. Well, guess what? You do see me saying something. I said it. I was wrong. I admitted it. Bear fans have every right to gloat. Bear fans have every right to celebrate. I'm a Bear fan. I don't know how long this lucky streak can go on, but if it takes them to the Super Bowl, hey, every team needs luck. Who knows? I can't believe that they're 9-3. I don't think that at least half of their victories are legit. And if you take those 5 wins away, they're 4. They're 4-8 right now. Not far from what I predicted, but that's not the case. They won those games, whether it was lucky, whether they were handed to them, whatever it was, they're wins. I said 5-12. They're 9-3. They're going to have a winning season. I was wrong. And you know what? It took a weight off my shoulders. I felt good about myself. And I realized that, you know what? If you're going to put yourself out there with strong-held opinions, then if they come true, fine. But if you're wrong, you really should say, I was wrong. Nobody's perfect. We're all flawed. We all have great egos. We all have this great self-esteem, especially last several years. But I think if more people would say, I was wrong, when they are wrong, when the facts are there, if more people would say, as I said on a nightly basis in Inherit the Wind, I don't know the answer. If more people would say that on a regular basis, they would be honest with themselves, they would see the facts, and they would at least admit to some kind of validity on the other side of the argument for once, as opposed to just being entrenched in your own opinion without considering any other outside influence or any factual data, but just saying, no, I don't want to hear it. But I could have said, blah, 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 bears are bad, bears are bad, bears are bad, blah, 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 blah. I don't care, they're 9-3, they're terrible, blah, 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 blah. Who looks like a fool then? It's not easy to say I was wrong. We shy away from saying I was wrong, but in our heart of hearts, we know there are times when we were wrong. And whether it's in a one-on-one situation with someone that you like or you love, or whether it's on a public forum, when you to admit to yourself and to others, I was wrong, it sets a new tone. It sets a new tone for yourself that maybe you can begin to open yourself to realities and new facts and new informations and perhaps change your point of view, or at least acknowledge that the other side isn't always wrong. If we're going to get out of this divisiveness that we are in, and it seems to only be getting stronger, if we're going to get through this, we have to start internally with ourselves. And so I may, in my own small way, in my own little small world, on something as insignificant as a football season, I tried to take a step forward. I didn't want to be closed-minded. I didn't want to be in a group think. I didn't want to be isolated. I didn't want to be delusional. I didn't want to be anti-factual. I wanted to be open-minded. And to do that, the facts were in front of me, and they were opposite of what I thought. And so there was no other reason. When I made my predictions, I offered the reasons why. And they were valid at the time, before the season. They were valid at the time. But as the season went on, they weren't as valid anymore. And so I said I was wrong. And I have to tell you, and I'll share it with you, it felt good to admit it. And if that helps you in any way in your life moving forward, I hope that if you're in a situation when you realize you were wrong, you will shed that ego, you will shed that selfishness, and you will be honest with yourself and honest either with the other person that you were, that you may have wronged, or as I said before, especially on anti-social media, if you were wrong, admit it. It's not a weakness, it's a strength. It's ironic, but there is power and there is satisfaction and there is growth in saying, I was wrong. It takes a pretty smart person to say, I don't know the answer. And so ends another episode of Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic. Every Monday, a new episode is posted at WGNRadio.com or wherever you go to find your favorite podcast. We are there. And don't forget to tell your friends, tell your family, tell anyone who listens to a podcast that your favorite podcast is Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, and it should be theirs too. Your loyalty and devotion are much appreciated. Hope you enjoyed episode number 498. I'm Jim Toronto. I ain't here on business. I'm only here for fun. You've been listening to Elton Jim's Captain Podtastic, from the end of my mind to your ears. Sometimes I'm right. Sometimes I'm wrong.